Welcome back, everybody, to Keeping It Real with Chris Norris, a podcast production of Revox Social. Revox is a full-service social media marketing and consulting agency in Erie, Pennsylvania. Today, I'm excited to welcome our guest, Zach Stahlsmith. He's an entrepreneur and founder of Apex Drop here in Erie, Pennsylvania, an influencer marketing agency. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited. Obviously, we just got done talking off air about how, you know, Erie is a small town here in northwestern Pennsylvania, but the internet is also a very connected medium. So I feel like I know so much about you. You had known a lot about me. So we're finally separated by a piece of plexiglass, but still finally able to sit down and talk and get to know more about one another. And I'm really excited to dive into your story and a little bit about influencer marketing. Why don't we get to kind of the background info about Zach Stahlsmith? Where are you from? Tell us a little bit about what brought you to the point of where we're sitting today.
Yeah, thank you. So, if you haven't heard of me, the CEO and founder of Apex Drop, and I have been born and raised in Erie, Pennsylvania, this little city that's between Pittsburgh and Buffalo and Cleveland, and we just rock things from this little town. And I came up in Pennsylvania with a big family. I got five siblings. Went to college for marketing and ended up starting a business when I was 18. And this is my second venture and second business as Apex Drop. And just obsessed with digital marketing. People might call me a serial entrepreneur. I plan on doing lots more than this. My goal is to help grow this city while I'm also growing my family and my skill set. So that's my high level.
Awesome. What intrigues you? I'm just curious. You said you've always been intrigued by marketing, and marketing has evolved so much since you were, I believe you said, 5 years old in your background that you sent me, that you've been really into marketing. What intrigues you most about marketing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I remember being obsessed with psychology primarily. When I was in high school, I had some great teachers, Coach Sanders and McDowell, if anybody from Erie knows him, he's a great man. He had a passion for the mind, and that passion just instilled in me and sucked me right in. And I actually wanted to be a psychologist, and when I went to college, I had planned on psychology. But I had this grand ambition to start a business. And those two things just don't really, you know, psychology and business, those are two completely separate things, really. When I was told I needed to go to school for 8 years, I'm like, I don't think I can do 8 years of school, and then I'm just gonna end up, I don't know. It just didn't seem like it was fit. So combining psychology with business, I don't see anything better than marketing. So yeah, that's where the drive comes from.
Wow. And what's some of the biggest, just before we dive into what you're really specializing in these days, you're only a few years older than me, but what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in the marketing space over the past, 25, 30 years that you've been kind of intrigued by it? Obviously, it's changed so much and it will continue to change. Like you said, we're only in the early stages. What are some of the things that stand out to you, I guess, from a marketing perspective?
Yeah, there's just this massive shift happening where consumers have become in control rather than brands. So there's this, I don't know, if you've ever read the book Marketing Rebellion by Mark Schaefer, he talks about this shift as well. It's a mindset where brands used to be able to use TV and radio, where they would blast these messages out, and it was them telling the world what they were, and it worked. It worked really well. With the internet, obviously, you can't talk about the past 25 years without saying the internet and social media. It's all shifted now to where consumers have control over what's being said about brands. And brands are going nuts because they've lost that control. So this shift has made influencer marketing more and more special because it's about the consumer. It's about the people who are using the products and what they think rather than what the brand is telling the world.
I couldn't agree more. I think influencer marketing is huge. It's really evolved over the last couple of years. And I honestly think, from someone who also sort of lives in the marketing world, that there's a lot of uneducation behind influencer marketing. So that was the biggest reason I really wanted to talk to you today, because I want you to help not only me, but even the folks listening to this show understand more about influencer marketing. It's the world you live in. It's how you've made a living and built a successful company. I guess at the very root level, define in layman's terms for us, influencer marketing.
So influencer marketing, the way most of the world sees it, is a way to get people talking about your products that are popular. So, you know, it's, I hate that people go right to like the Kardashians or these popular Instagrammers that hold up a bottle of pills and say, I love this, you know, it helps me. But that's kind of where we're at. And it's typically where someone is paid to promote a product. It's kind of like celebrity marketing or endorsements, but on social media. That's what most people see it as, but I actually don't see it that way at all.
Tell us how you see influencer marketing.
So I like to think of it as a third-party validation. So you need, brands need to stop telling their stories. What they need is others to tell their stories for them. And that third-party validation is what builds trust. So getting or having someone express their feelings about your product that just so happens to have lots of followers is a great outcome for any brand. And any brand that has great products is naturally going to experience this. I think Apple was a good example of a company that had influencer marketing before that was a thing. They just make great, great products that influencers enjoyed. And to them, the influencer was that person who wanted the newest product, that was that cutting edge. I mean, we don't see them as cutting edge as much anymore, but back in the day, they were the most beautiful, sexy product. And so the influencers or the people that wanted those new products went to Apple products, would line up for them and buy them without even seeing them. And so I think of like Apple as a company that got influencer marketing before it was a thing.
That's a good point. I remember the thing that always makes Apple stand out to me is they sell their product visually through like television commercials, for instance, without really ever making a sales pitch. There's no call to action like purchase now, buy now, visit apple.com. They were the very first adopters of like just showing people's stories, influencers as you speak of, and why their products make a difference in their lives. And I always loved that because I obviously am an Apple, you know, person, and it always was intriguing to me because like Android and, you know, all the other companies seem to create these commercials that while they may have been effective, they were pointing out flaws in Apple's product. I remember the commercial, it was like, it matched up Apple's phone, like, oh, the battery's dead. And this was a commercial for Android. And they were basically just pointing out all the problems with Apple. The kid dropped his phone in the water. And they're like, oh, well, Android, their phones are waterproof. And oh, the battery's dead. Oh, don't worry, this one holds a larger. And I said to my wife, I remember watching that commercial, I was like, you know, that's what's interesting about all these other brands, they have to almost point out the flaws in Apple's product, whereas Apple just tells the stories and shows the people whose lives are influenced by it.
It's 100% right.
Yeah.
And people get caught up on it, on this mindset of science and targeting the right market. And it's frustrating for me because that obsession kind of leads to overconfidence into the results. So if you think, all I got to do is find the right people and get this product in their hands, that's really not 100% true. It's more about what you say rather than who you reach. So there's a play here that we have to work with brands to help their story and their product be sexy before we actually say, these are the people that would express your story properly. So there's some give take and it's a partnership. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people see it as a one-sided, hire these influencers, get them to talk about our products, it's gonna be a magic pill, it's gonna help us. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions, is that it's gonna help your brand grow no matter what.
Mm. So it almost sounds like at its very core, again, kind of on an entry level, you know, introduction to influencer marketing, it goes back to the roots of a message that has been around the marketing world for years, word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Because it really is, if you see your friend using the product and they're a quote unquote influencer, you are more likely to perhaps pursue that product because you trust and maybe relate and connect to that influencer, so to speak. Am I following right?
Exactly.
Okay. Cool. Well, you said a quote I wanted to ask you to kind of reiterate on it. I read it on your blog. It said, to maintain trust, an influencer must stay genuine at all costs and never treat the trust they have earned as a commodity to be exchanged. Can you can you unpack that a little bit for us? That's like some deep stuff about influencer marketing, but I feel like we're ready to learn more about kind of what you mean by that.
Yeah, that's about as deep as it gets. And it's our motto, trust is not a commodity. So trust is not a commodity to mean So imagine you see somebody on Instagram today and they just, it's not an ad, that you see an actual person talking about a product and they say, use my promo code 50% off, and it's got their name in it. I mean, there's no doubt in your mind that they got some kind of kickback. So there's this sellout nature that people forget. Just a few years ago, I asked my son, he's 17, I'm a dad of one. My son is into the YouTube scene, into Snapchat and Instagram. And I go, what do you think when someone just sells out like this? And I'm showing him a picture. And he goes, you mean like selling product? You know, like selling out products? Like, that's awesome. And I go, no, I mean like selling out, like they're just showing something off to get some money. And he did not get that concept. It's actually cool to have sponsors on these platforms. So this whole, like, it's a weird dichotomy. The influencer feels like they need to sell stuff to look cool. And so it's, and your generation, my generation, probably gets sellout a little bit more than the younger generation. We get, you know, staying genuine usually means there's no bias. So it's weird. So there's this slow move towards where influencers are finding out that they need to keep that trust more than anything, or they're going to lose their followership. They worked so hard to get all this trust, these followers. And they're forgetting that eventually when people see you do this over and over again, where you say things that are trying to be more self-serving and not as much as not about entertaining or keeping your audience excited and moving forward, it just starts to bite you in the ass. And influencers are losing all the respect. I mean, it's just right now, and that's the way the industry is right now, is influencer marketing is kind of poo-poo. It's not the best place to be.
Right. So I guess if I understand correctly, if I'm following someone because they are, let's say, a father, and I relate to them, I connect with them, they've built this massive audience of fellow fathers who are like, man, I have followed you, your journey, you're so relatable, you share your struggles, you're authentic and real, that's why I follow you. Then one day, instead of posting the struggles they have with raising a child, they post, like you said, a promo code, or all of a sudden they're endorsed or sponsored by, you know, a product. I would look at that, and you're right, I would. I would say, oh, bummer. He's a sellout. Now his posts are potentially going to just be, a lot of them are going to be product driven. Is that the language? Is that, that's the sellout process for me, but not everybody, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount of coolness. So like for you and I, it might be more of like that kind of sellout, but for the younger generation, it's, whoa, look how cool they are. So there's a weird balance here that's happening, and the influencers are learning pretty fast that it's actually not cool to go against your genuine nature. So that's why I say trust is not a commodity. Don't treat that trust that you've built to be something that you want to turn into a monetization. So the problem is influencers want their hobby to be a job.
Right.
You know, they want to be paid. Yeah. And that's perfectly fine. I would want to be paid for my hobby. So it's just how they're going about it. You know, they're reaching out to brands saying, hey, you pay me and I'll tell the world about your product. It works really well when they've already been using that product, but that's not very natural to do on a large scale. So like one or two products, let's just say you really like a certain brand, you reach out to that brand and say, hey, I like your product already. I already use it on my show. I'd love to promote it and maybe get a kickback because I already talk about it so much. I like those kind of relationships because it starts with the love of the product and not the, there's money here to be made.
Mm.
So the genuine nature comes from the love of the product first.
I see. And is this where the micro-influencer enters the scene? So I don't have millions of followers, but I love, I love my iPhone. Would I be considered a micro-influencer? So there's influencers and there's micro-influencers. I really want to focus on the difference, because before I met you, I didn't know there was a difference. So am I considered a micro-influencer because I don't have 3 million followers? However, I love your product. I don't expect to be paid for it, but man, I will talk about your product to my 5,000 followers because they trust me on a relatable and real level. Is that what a micro-influencer is? And if I'm off, please explain what a micro-influencer is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good way of thinking about it. And I would say you're likely a micro-influencer. I'd have to know a little bit more about the followership if I was going to put you in our network. But typically a micro-influencer is someone with a smaller audience but bigger engagement. So that just means that I mean, imagine you only have 100 people who follow you. You're going to really pay attention to if they like you, if they comment. You might even comment back every time. That means you're engaged. You're listening. As you become celebrity, you lose that engagement because there's no way to track all these comments and these things, all this feedback. So you lose engagement as you get bigger just naturally. So our theory is in micro-influencer marketing is why not take someone on a smaller level and scale that so you have the high engagement and the big reach, but you don't have all the BS that comes with being like the Kardashians. Low engagement, no trust. So yeah, the micro side, what we define micro-influencers as for our company is someone with 5 to 50,000 followers typically on Instagram, we'd be considered micro. That's not a standard in the industry, that's our standard. And we're not unhappy if a 100,000 follower person comes into our network or a 3,000 follower person comes into our network because they have a great trust. So just keep in mind that range is more of just to kind of get an idea. And then, you know, on YouTube, it's different. On Facebook, it's different. But the micro, just the concept of the micro is someone who's coming up. I wouldn't say they've made it yet. And made it does not mean they're being paid. Made it means that they've been known by, usually it's 1 million people or more if you've made it. 100,000 or more followers, we call that macro influence. So there's different tiers. The celebrities at the top, the macros are in the middle, the micros are lower to the bottom, and then there's even these things called nano influencers. And nanos are kind of like the everyday people. Micro influencers are just, I would say, the up-and-comers.
Okay. So a micro influencer, those are the kind of people you primarily work with at Apex Drop, correct? Mostly yeah. Micro influencers?
All micros in our case, yeah. It's all okay. Micro influencers.
So tell us a little bit about like how does that process work? So again, if we go back to example of me being a big fan of the iPhone and I come to you and say, "Hey, I've got a couple thousand followers, but man, they're always commenting on everything I post. I want to become a micro influencer." If I understand correctly, I don't get compensated, but what do I get compensated with? Not cash. I'm not looking to make money. How does that work? If I'm a micro influencer working with Apple, what is the payoff for me?
So micro influencers typically don't work with Apple directly. So Apple, because they don't have a big enough audience. So there's no bridge. So micro influencers need a stepping stone to become celebrity. And the stepping stone that we've created for them is literally connecting them to brands and getting them lots of free stuff that they can use to create content with. Our focus is help the influencer create incredible content. We start with that. And if we can help an influencer create incredible content, that'll benefit the brand in most cases. So the influencers come to us with a need, which is, I'm trying to keep up with this audience that's growing. Can you give me more ideas? Can you give me things to talk about? So we put things in front of them and say, we'd love for you to talk about these things. And they pick and choose what they want to talk about. So it's about kind of like product sampling. They get lots of product samples in the mail. They don't get paid if they talk about it, and they don't get paid if they don't talk about it. There's no money involved. It's products. And that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't work. And that's where Apex Drop comes in to make it work. We found a way to scale it and to make that work.
Very cool. Can you give me some examples of the kind of people you work with? And what types of products they are, you know, sharing on their social media feeds, I guess maybe some of your success stories and some of the marquee, you know, people that you've worked with and the brands you've worked with. Just would love to know more about your clients.
Yeah, we work with so many cool companies. There's been over 400 companies that have ran campaigns. We've run over 1,000 campaigns. We've produced millions of pieces of content. So there's so much to talk about there, but some of the brands that stand out would be Pact Apparel would probably be one of the fun ones. Pact Apparel is a fast-growing fashion company, and we started with fashion companies, and so that's near and dear to my heart. And Pact has a website called wearpact.com. They are kind of fast fashion. They're very trendy, women's clothing primarily, but they do men's clothing as well. They have they've run campaigns with us in the over 1,000 influencers. So they've just done so much scale with us. So their growth curve has been fun to watch. So they hired us to get product samples into the hands of micro influencers all over Instagram. They wanted to own Instagram. They wanted people to just keep saying, what's this Pact company? What's this clothing? And they've done a tremendous job. getting influencers engaged and interested. And the influencers have been really great at sharing their story. And, you know, they're all about that self or that, you know, sourcing that's proper and the type of product that's good for this world and not the fast fashion kind of mindset. So it's a great middle ground, a little step above Forever 21 type companies. And they've seen tremendous growth in their traffic. They've seen tremendous growth in their conversion rates. They've seen tremendous growth in their followers. They've seen tremendous growth in pretty much every area of business because of these influencers. So influencer marketing can help many areas. For them specifically, I would just say they were a big part of their growth curve. So I'm proud of that. Other brands that we've worked with, we've had Ulta Beauty. You know, we've worked with Procter & Gamble, helping them with their Swiffer product. Some of these big names, it's fun to talk about the big names, but honestly, I like to help the little guy. So, you know, we helped this diaper subscription company called Abby and Finn, which is just a tremendous company, really great hearts. They love to give back and they take a ton of their profits and put it back into families that need money. So Abby and Finn has a subscription service. You know, they want people to know that you can get diapers every month for your baby and it's just gonna be consistent and they're gonna be the right sizes. And so they've developed this really neat system and their subscription base has increased exponentially since signing with us. So we're also really proud of that we're able to drive the interest with these influencers and we help accelerate growth for good brands.
Wonderful. So as far as the kind of the logistics of how influencer and micro-influencer marketing works, you send them the product and you request that they post a picture, use maybe a certain amount of hashtags, tag the product handle. How does that kind of the nitty gritty of this process work from start to finish? And how do you execute it? Like, I feel like, you know, somebody, what if they're not good at taking great quality placement product photos? And, you know, how does that process work from start to finish as far as like the logistics?
You're opening the box. There's a lot to it.
Yeah.
But the high level would be there's an app that influencers, they come to us and they join our network and we go through it and we vet out the ones that might not be considered influential. So we've only got about 15,000 influencers out of over 100,000 applications. And so we're selective. We believe that influence is the small, that not everyone's an influencer. Most influencer agencies think of everybody's an influencer, which is just not, I don't think that's true. Everybody can be influential, but not everyone would be considered this type of influencer. So they come into the network, they go onto the app and they see all these cool products and they go, oh man, I want one of these, I want one of those. So they start applying to these campaigns, we call them campaigns. And these are products that brands have agreed to give to people that are in our network if they want them. So they sign up for those campaigns. We then go through the applications and make sure that they align, meaning that their blog or their Instagram handle kind of matches the aesthetic or matches what the brand's product is. So there's a little bit of whittling it down to the right group. And then once we get the right group, we have the brand send product to all the influencers, and that can be 100 influencers or 1,000 influencers. It's a large scale campaign. So the difference between us and maybe doing it in-house is that we do things that you would normally only be able to do maybe 3 or 4 of at a time if you were lucky. We do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds at once. So we batch it, we make it easy to scale, and that's where you get the real impact, is at the scale level. It's really hard to get great impact from just a few or a handful of influencers at this level. So once the influencer gets the product, that's when all the fun starts to happen. You know, they're taking pictures. Like, they walk up to their door and they see boxes, and you know they feel like a celebrity. So they grab all those boxes, they open them, and they start deciding how they're going to share, if they want to or not. If they love the product, they're allowed to share it anywhere they want. We love Instagram. We start our conversations on Instagram, so we primarily want to see them post there. But if they don't, they also have options. So the options would be, you don't like the product, we'd love to know why. If you don't feel like you want to post about this, we'd love to know why. If you don't want to use it, we'd like to know why. So there's this out, which is basically anything goes. The only thing we don't like is when you just stop communicating. We call it, you know, a non-communication influencer. That would be someone who just stops talking. They get the product and they just disappear. We want to at least know why you didn't like it. So there's just this this idea that nature, the outcome, is rational and good. So like no matter what happens, it's good for the brand, whether it's great posts happening on Instagram or great feedback because the product wasn't great. Either outcome is great. So we have this different mindset, which is try not to control it. Brands typically want to control the outcome. They want to make sure that the product's perfect in the hand of the perfect person, being said perfectly, in the perfect background, and you know what I mean. That's cheesy, staged BS, and that's what turns everybody off, and brands don't get it. They think that that's what people want, is this perfect thing. People are sick of fake. They want reality. So we allow reality to happen, and that's what makes micro-influencers so special, is we're encouraging them to be authentic. We're encouraging them to do whatever they feel like doing and not telling them at all how they should be talking about this to their people, or if anything at all, not telling them anything. You might say, well, how do you make sure that when you send products to people that they're gonna talk? You can't. Mm. So if you hire us, we can guarantee that we will get people talking because we've done this a million times, you know?
Sure.
We know what to expect. Yeah. We also know there's a certain amount that won't post, and that's nature, and we're good with nature.
So if you send the product and they don't like it, or they wouldn't use it in their own home, or they wouldn't endorse it, they don't post about that, correct? You don't encourage them to give a scathing review on social media.
Well, I mean, that would be silly because we work with the brands. The brands actually do pay us to make those connections. We would be crazy to just be like, go bash this brand.
But you're looking for the feedback is what you're saying. Yes. Like, so if they say, yeah, I didn't like this, you report that back to your client, say, hey, this person didn't post because they said they didn't like it and here's why. So even that feedback is valuable for them.
It's more valuable than the post, if I'm being honest.
Sure.
Some brands don't want to hear that, but that's the truth. Feedback loops are killer. So you have to be willing to listen to your audience and make changes. And who better to listen to than the influential types that are using it? So, you know, there's a little bit of blindness in brands. They think that they're the king of the world, the product's the best. And when someone says, hey, it's not great, they're gonna react in two different ways. They're either gonna go, they're full of crap, they're not the right person, or they're gonna go, oh man, we need to make some adjustments here. So we like to work with brands that are willing to test and learn. We do not like working with brands that are not willing to experiment and listen to the feedback. So we vet brands just as hard as we vet influencers. There has to be a certain amount of courage. You can't be a wimp and do influencer marketing. So we like no wimpy brands is one of my things.
Nice.
So there's this feeling of letting go of brand control. We have to educate the brand that that's what reality is letting go of control, allowing creative freedom. But the way we do it that makes it work is we still build guidelines. We have expectations that are so far out that an influencer can kind of feel freedom inside of those guidelines, which is no nudity, you know, no swearing, you know, those kind of things are kind of simple. But if you think about it, that's all you probably should say, is if you like it, we'd love to hear about it. And that's a good attitude. And if you don't like it, we'd really like to know why. So we have a built-in a process where they can provide feedback privately if they want. And in the history of our company, which is nearly 6 years old, we've never had an influencer bash a brand. So when a brand calls me and says, how do you make sure? How do you make sure there's nothing bad? I go, I can't make sure, but it's never happened. Why? Because the expectation is there's freedom for you and you can share however you want. However, if you do have negative, we'd prefer it to be over in this area because this is where it's going to be the most useful. So the influencer feels really comfortable to be themselves and to share honest feedback. And that trust level that we've built with the influencer allows us to do authentic marketing rather than what a brand typically does, which is control marketing. Mm-hmm. So having a middleman like us, we're essentially an influencer of influencers. We're the third party that you need to sell your product to influencers, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. And it makes sense for me if I was the product and I got the feedback from you from an influencer that you guys trust, that Apex Drops connects my product to, and they come back with negative feedback and say, hey, you know, just didn't love it. Here's what you can do to make it better. Well, I'm going to go make it better. And then I'm gonna try again because I want that person who is a trusted influencer of yours to say, well, not only did they hear my feedback, they, you know, took it to heart, changed the product and sent it back to me. Now I'm gonna scream their praises on social media. Is that kind of the end goal?
Yes, I mean, you just nailed it. And we can tell which brands are gonna succeed by the way they respond to feedback. I can tell you if a brand's gonna fail before they hit bottom. If they can't listen to feedback, they're never going to succeed. So it is, it's about strategy around feedback more than anything. And a lot of influencer marketers don't realize that that's most important, is that the feedback loop has to be closed and it has to be fed and it has to be discussed. And there's hard conversations that need to be had. And I'm thriving on helping people grow. So I don't care if you don't like me, I just want to make sure you grow. So it's not about feelings. It's not about, I know, you know, nobody likes to hear criticism. So we always put it as a, here's an opportunity to grow. And if they take that and they move with it, we know that that's the kind of company we want to deal with. So a lot of companies that come to us, we end up seeing that they have no open-mindedness around feedback, and we cut them out. And the crazy thing is, this is an interesting story. One of our first brands that we signed was this little jewelry company. I'm not going to get into the names of these companies, but this little jewelry company and their distributor, or their, the company that supplied all their jewelry, was this massive, massive corporation. I'm not going to get into the names again because legal problem, but our dream was to be able to connect to their distributor and the manufacturer. And we're like, oh man, just imagine if we could go all the way up the chain. So we're a little startup, two people. And we're like, we signed this little jewelry brand. We were so excited. And just within 2 years, their distributor became one of our biggest clients. And we were like, we did it. We made it. We're at the top. You know, like this was like the dream. Yeah. We have this giant connection. They happened to be the first company we ever kicked out. So our biggest client was scum, and I'm just gonna say it, they're scum. So they literally tried to cheat the influencers. They would send fake, this is not even a joke, they sent fake gold, fake jewelry to the influencers. And we caught them laughing about this problem on a phone call, where they go, they were talking to one of my employees, and they were saying things like, these influencers are idiots, they don't even realize this isn't even real diamond. And we're like, wait, you said it's diamond. And they're like, no, we said it's cubic zirconia. We go, no, it says diamond in the headline. We're promoting diamonds. And so this company was laughing about fooling influencers into believing these gifts were real deal. And we had been helping them for a while. And it hurt when we found out. We're like, we've been spreading terrible things. This is a lie. And we started reading into the reviews and we found some complaints, but we realized that they were trying to control those reviews that said this is fake. So it became this, we kicked them out. And we learned a very valuable lesson, which is, you know, there's no amount of money that'll make us want to spread BS around the world. And, you know, my team got right behind that and we've grown. But kicking out your biggest client is scary.
Wow. Man, that's, I appreciate you sharing that. That is the opposite of a sellout on your end of things, because you, man, right. They were growing, they were your best client, and you're like, this isn't ethical, this isn't what I, and that was, I mean, luckily that was early on in the development of your company, so you made a hard choice then and there to be like, we're not doing this moving forward.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that was the right decision to make.
Well, to me, it was more important that my team trusted me, because I worked very hard to build that trust. So,
yeah.
You know, just like I've been preaching, trust is not a commodity. It's not something, we never ever sell out. So as a company, we don't sell out.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, I love it. Let me just read another quote. I was wondering if you could dive in a little bit. It says, we must focus as marketers and stop hiring. Let's start inspiring. I say stop chasing influencers and start attracting them so they can naturally make your brand look great and you can break the Google addiction. Talk about that quote and tell me more about the Google addiction as well.
Yeah, so that's a lot to unpack. You took a little chunk that had a lot in it. So we need to stop hiring and start inspiring. What that means is the old school way of doing influencer marketing is to go out and hire someone and create a job. I think that it should be more about attraction. And that's our method, but not many people are doing it this way. So how do you stop chasing influencers around and start having them come to you so that the outcomes are natural? You know, so you can go out and you can start DMing influencers today. You can find somebody who looks popular, perfectly aligned with your audience. Start DMing them, and they're probably going to respond in two different ways. They're going to say, talk to my agent, or they're going to say, that'll be $5,000, or, you know, there'll be some awkward transactional relationship, because you're a brand and they're an influencer, and that relationship is, you pay me and I'll talk. So because there's this understanding of what influencer marketing is on both sides, it starts with this really goofy, awkward thing. So I like to think of, I call it the new neighbor analogy. So like, when you move into a new house, Like, what are you supposed to do as a new neighbor, or you have a new neighbor? You're supposed to go next door to the guy who's new and bring them a gift and say, hello, my name is Zach. I'm excited to meet you. I wanted to give you this gift. And, you know, if you need anything, I'm right next door. And you walk away with no expectation. It's okay if a week or two goes by and you need a rake to come over to your new neighbor's house and say, hey, could I borrow a rake? I'm Zach. You met me a couple weeks ago. How was the wine that I gave you? That relationship starts with no expectation of giving me anything. So we try and build the relationship with no expectation for the brand. The brand literally can't do that on their own. They just can't. They can't walk into an influencer relationship and say, I want to give you something so I can get something back. It just doesn't work that way. The brand legitimately has to walk in with a gift and say, I don't care what you do. And that's where the brands are messing up. They go, and so I've seen a shift. A lot of brands are actually trying this thing called trade collaboration, where you send a product out with no expectation. That's a huge problem, because the marketer's job is on the line if nothing happens. So if they send out, let's say, 10 products and only 5 get posted up, the boss is going to say, what about those other 5 things that you sent out? Why didn't anything happen? That's a waste of money. Stop doing that. It's a waste. So a big part of this is mindset and measurement. So the Google addiction, how does that relate? So the Google addiction is, everybody's addicted to Google, unfortunately. Google was extremely smart in the way they pulled us in. They made a free service that captured all the eyeballs in the world. And now they've monetized it to death, and we still love them. And it's somehow we don't care. They have set us up to have to pay for our own traffic for the rest of time. And so they could give it to us for free, but they don't. So they make us build all this content and great stuff for things to be found on the internet, and then they charge us for getting the eyeballs that go to it. Even though we could get them naturally, they don't want that. They want to make sure we pay. So the only way to get past that barrier is to build content that shows up organically. And everybody knows the difference between paid ads, but if you don't know, that's the stuff at the top that says ad and on the right side. And then under that is the organic stuff. Your goal should be absolutely to become the organic leader. And the way to get to being organic leaders are content, 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 consistently created content. And what better way to break that cycle, that addiction of paying for the ad, than to get someone else to tell your story in their platform, and to do that at scale? So with influencers, they're bloggers, they talk. These are artists, they're loud artists. Like, let's just be real. Creators, they aren't influencers, they're just artists, they like to talk. So, you know, get your stuff with these artists. Have them create content around your products because they love your products. And watch how magic happens. You know, you will get bumped up. Google loves things that are being talked about. They need that. They'll always need the natural organic traffic. So you can break the cycle of addiction with Google by investing in content marketing. And there's not a better way to do content marketing that I know of, or a cheaper or more affordable way, than to get micro-influencers talking about your products. And there's no easier way to scale than hire us. Obviously, I'm biased.
Good pitch. That's a good pitch. So tell me then, I guess, a good segue into what Apex Drop does. Who is an ideal client? Because I know when you and I talked the other day on the phone, you said, I don't want to go into this, you know, conversation with you and say that everybody should call us tomorrow and let us work with them. Who is an ideal client for Apex Drop?
A good Apex brand is one that stands for more than what their product is. So they're not money grabbers. They're not drama queens. They're not fake. They don't sell out, and they align with our morals. So like they're ethical. So a great brand for micro influencers in our network also has a product that can be cool online. So, you know, we do work with the service agencies or services. You know, you can kind of talk about airfare and flights with influencers because it's neat. They're going to go somewhere and they're going to talk about their trip and how they went on this flight. That's a service. But there's not many services that are easy to share. So we do services and sexy products. Typically, it's consumer packaged goods, small things. And the reason that works so well is because you can ship those products inexpensively. You know, they're affordable to ship out. If you have high margins and low shipping costs, and you have a product that's the right size to ship, and it would look good if someone took a picture of it, or that it could be looking good. Someone took a picture of it and put it up on Instagram, then you probably should be doing micro-influencer marketing. You should be doing it in-house, and you should be trying to scale it with agencies. If you're not, you're missing it. Like, this is a golden ticket. It's an easy way to grow all avenues of business, not just one. You don't just get the content. You get the reach. You get the awareness. You get the relationships that pay off. You get the customer for life sometimes. You know, all those things build from the foundation. So this is a foundational marketing investment. It's not a end level like Google paid click. The click is great. Everybody's buying clicks. But the reality is you want to get away from paying for that click. So you, like, again, a Google addiction, you got to wean off by getting the front foundation built. Consistent content, great content, real content, authentic content, genuine content. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah.
Stop telling them what to make.
Right. No, I love it. I love what I'm hearing that I really appreciate from a social media perspective is it all goes back to, you know, the relationship, the foundation of what social media essentially was developed for, building relationships, communicating with people, having conversations. Somewhere along the way, brands, businesses, companies have used it to, like you said, just kind of yell and blast their message out, with, you know, posting and ghosting, as I like to say. They just make a post and there's no conversation, there's no relationships, they don't reply to DMs. And with these influencers, it sounds like the whole process starts with developing relationships, constantly communicating, nurturing that relationship so that they continue to be an influencer for you. And that's what I love about how this connects with just bare bones social media marketing. It's like it goes back to everything I try to preach to people is, hey, you've got to figure out ways to be conversational, not sales driven on your social media platforms.
Yeah, try and tell a marketer that.
Yeah.
So the big problem in the marketing world, if you're a marketer listening to this, I feel your pain. I was in marketing my whole life. It's that your boss expects you to be a salesperson.
Sure.
So unfortunately, the education needs to start with you as a marketer. You need to get your team to see that you need to be a big picture thinker and that you shouldn't be the content creation guy. That's the influencer's job. We're turning marketers into content people, and they're not artists. They're storytellers, but they're not artists. They should be looking at art and then telling the world about that art. We've tried to create, like I keep seeing brands hiring these so quote unquote influencer types from college. I have 20,000 followers. You know, it's just some girl or dude who was in college and they just happen to be popular. And the whole company trusts them with their voice on social media. It's insane. So, and you know, there's inexperience and there's just ignorance. And inexperience plus ignorance equals just, it's not good. So you got to get, it's got to start with that. Those college types that just come out and they get hired as social media managers. You need to educate your team that it's not just about the clicks, that it is about outsourcing content creation to the best of your ability, and then let the marketer think bigger. Don't be the click guy. So, you know, hire somebody who does paid social. Definitely take advantage of Google. There's definite money to be made. I'm not saying that's a bad thing at all. I'm just saying you got to wean off, and that should be the marketer's primary job, is wean us off this machine that we're connected to where we're paying for all the traffic, we're paying for all the clicks. I want to reduce that number. The goal should be the volume that you're paying Google should slowly go over to content, and your traffic should still go up. So if you can make that balance happen as a marketer, you're winning for the company. Long term, that's going to pay off. That's a legacy. The problem is the short-sightedness. So marketers have to think bigger. Humans have to think further out. We can't be so obsessed with right now. The bosses, if you're listening, it's definitely stop telling your marketer to what were the sales numbers last month, because that's not their business. That's your sales job's business. That's your sales manager. That's your sales team. That's not your marketer's job. Your marketer's job is to feed the sales team opportunity. It's not to get the sale. So I think there needs to be a disconnect. The measurements are all messed up. The reporting is so messed up. You got to stop lumping in sales with marketing numbers. Google, I hate to say it, I think they knew what they were doing when they created this you pay for ROI mindset. Now all old head owners go, oh, internet equals ROI. I can measure it. It's perfect because the internet measures everything. And you can't have your cake and eat it too with influencers. You cannot tell them what to do. Get them to post, have them sell for you and be salespeople, and also make sure that they're authentic at the same time. You can't have those two things. So I like to just say, stop trying to control everything, but hire experts that can help you. So there's so much strategy, and it's not as hard as it sounds, but just realize you're biased. Your brand is biased. Stop thinking you know everything. You think your product's perfect, but your customer knows more than you. Stop looking for the 5 out of 5 star review and start looking for the 4 out of 5s. You want authenticity, then you want the pros and cons. The cons are part of it. And not many brands realize that the cons are what creates the reality. I would give, if I could get, as a brand, 100 comments right now that you just guarantee me, I'll give you 100 comments. Would I want 5 stars or would I want 4 stars? I would absolutely 100% take the 4 stars as long as they come with pros and cons lists. And what you really want is, here are the things that suck about this brand, but it's still worth it. That's the ideal ad. Is this is not perfect, nothing is, but here's why it's worth it. If you can get there, you've created authentic reality for the customer and people will buy into that authentic reality. So, you know, you can't control this. That's the crazy part, is as much as you want that to happen, you can't control it. But the nice thing is if you give up control, that will happen naturally. And so we just try and guide people into that.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, because nothing's more frustrating, even from a marketer's perspective, than they gave us 5 stars, but they didn't say why. Or they gave us 1 stars and they told us all the reasons why. Mm-hmm. That 4 out of 5 with some pros and cons is perfect. Because like you said, you're saying it's not perfect, but man, it's still worth, you know, 4 out of 5 stars. And I'm going to keep 1 star because it isn't perfect, but here's why I don't think it's perfect. And you can assume that I think it's still pretty awesome because I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. So that's invaluable feedback. I agree with you. And, you know, I think that with social media, I tend to run the other direction when someone says, we want to work with you because we want to drive sales. That scares me. And you're right, that the mindset and the metrics and everything else is always pointed toward, well, you know, you post the thing on the social media thingy madoodle, and then they click on it and they go to the website thing and then they click purchase now. And then we can track and say, ooh, the Facebook post clicked, they to the website and then they clicked buy now, and good job, marketing professional. And that's the cycle we live in. You're right.
Sales.
And very few people have, you know, the approach and the mindset that you have and that your team at Apex Drop is trying to do to change the narrative of our, as you said, old headed marketing perspective. I love it. And let me ask you just a couple more questions here before we wrap up. You had said earlier, you know, why people need to, I guess, outsource their influencer marketing. So I guess if someone's listening to this and they're like, I'm in, out with the old, in with the new, why do you recommend them outsource influencer marketing? You touched on it a little bit, but I want to give you an opportunity to kind of, you know, pitch why Apex Drop is worth the investment for somebody that's like, you know what, the social media manager isn't our micro influencer. Why do we need to outsource that process to someone like your company?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll try and stay out of the bias here as best I can. So like, we might not be perfect for many brands, but the way I look at it is you should do what you do best and let the experts handle the rest. So if you're very good at influencer marketing, that means you've got 5-6 years of experience. You've run campaigns, you know how to manage the authenticity, you know how to run the metrics and reports with your boss, you've got buy-in from your team, and you understand the value and you can pitch it, then keep doing what you're doing. There's just, I don't see that very often. I don't see that actually ever. So like, I don't know. You got to admit to yourself first that maybe you're not a micro influencer expert and pull yourself and say, maybe I should hire an expert for that. So we are experts. I can proudly say that we started micro influencer marketing as an agency that only did that, and we're the first. So we have more experience. Also, it's such a pain in the ass to work with influencers, and anybody who's listening knows it sucks. It sucks because it sucks up your inbox. It sucks up all your time. Relationship management was not what you were hired to do, and that's all you do. So you can sit there and pretend like you want to do it, but after trying it for a while, you don't. Nobody wants to do this job. It's garbage. I'll just be honest. You know how many times your DMs get responded with, pay me? Like, how often? It's going to be, it's hell. So if you're going through hell with influencer marketing, I think making a pitch to outsource makes a lot of sense if you can afford it. And I don't think people can afford not to invest in it, especially if like they fit that parameter I described of having big margins and great products that could be sampled out, because that is the easiest way to spread the word. It's that word of mouth that you want. So One guy or two guys on a team trying to do influencer marketing is typically 10 to 12 products per month that they can get out there and get some content around. That's not going to have the impact you think. So if your boss is going to say, where's the money? Why isn't this working? It's probably because you can't scale it. So I've figured that scaling is key. So it's simple math. Take a one person with a million followers. That's what we would call a million reach or a million follower reach. That's 1 million people reached. Maybe not exactly, but you get the idea. Then there's, let's say, 100 people that have 10,000 reach each. That's a million reach. That's the same number. However, the 100 times 10,000 is insanely more powerful than that one person because of what we call engagement. So to sell this to your boss, you got to say, cost per engagement is super high on the celebrities. Cost per engagement is super low on the influencers, these micro ones. And so your boss, get them on the CPE train, cost per engagement train. If you can show them, you can compare apples to apples then. And then if you go out there and you shop for agencies like Apex, you can say, hey, look at this other agency that's like Apex. They're cheaper. I would challenge you to figure out their CPEs. They won't talk about it because no one talks about it. The CPE is the engagement. So what is engagement? Just in case you're not familiar, engagement is likes plus comments divided by followers. That's kind of a standard. You can fake it. It's hard to fake, but just be careful. Make sure that you're working with a legitimate company that's got a reputable history, and they're not just pulling your chain. So you got CPE is the key.
CPE is the key. I like that. Okay, awesome. All right, so you really have walked us through so much, educated people from start to finish on how influencer marketing works, how that micro-influencer marketing works, even help some people identify maybe they are a micro-influencer and maybe they need to reach out to Apex Drop and say, hey, I want to be one of your clients. But even the business owner locally, regionally, and beyond who wants to shift their marketing mindset and really buy into the micro-influencer approach and even, you know, get on the CPE train, as you say, where can they learn more about what you're doing at Apex Drop and whether or not they are a good fit for you?
Yeah, that's the website, apexdrop.com. And if you're interested, we do demos or we'll do a discovery call with your brand. Usually it's 20, 30 minutes to have a chat and we'll figure out if you're a good fit or not through that conversation. And you know, it's definitely worth the 20 or 30 minutes to have the talk. Brands that work with us can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, but that doesn't mean that they have to. So we have affordable options for different levels. Typically, the startup doesn't have the funds. So if you're a startup, I would say you probably don't have the funds to invest in marketing just yet. But if you've established your company, a couple years in, and you have established a product, please give us a call.
Awesome. Zach, I feel like I could talk marketing with you for another hour, but let's save that for another episode. I really appreciate you coming on the show, educating me and our audience on the good things you're doing in the marketing world and all the the recognition you're bringing to even to the community here in Erie, Pennsylvania. So I appreciate your time and sharing all this knowledge with us and keep up all the good work you guys are doing over at Apex Drop.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.